Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about extreme sports for the blind. In this case, canoeing. We'll meet Jose Tamayo and talk to him about some really extreme canoe trips that he does through the jungle in alligator-infested water, and some of the technology he uses to keep in touch while he's in the jungle. But first, our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Jose Tamayo, who we'll meet later in the show.
I have one advice for people who are in a situation such as mine and quote-unquote situation, because I think that we all have challenges. We seem to think that because we're missing something that we're not normal. And my advice is that never let anyone tell you what you can do. What you can do comes from within you. It comes from inside of you. It doesn't come from someone telling you you can or cannot do something. I teach that to my daughters every day. I talk to them about that every day. My family knows that when I do something, it's not because somebody told me you can do it or you cannot do it. I do it because I know that I can do it. And I've accomplished many things, such as, you know, living alone and these paddling trips. And I've learned so many things by deciding that I can decide when or when I cannot do something. That is my advice to everybody. Just make it your goal to decide for yourself what you can or cannot do. The minute you let an external source tell you what you can or cannot do, then it becomes very difficult.
And that is great advice. I can really resonate with that. I mean, half the issue is just knowing that you want to do something, then finding a way to work it out, and just keeping a positive attitude.
Well, and ignoring the people who tell you, you can't do that, you're blind.
Yes, right. You run into that a lot. I thought our son's kindergarten teacher had a great phrase for capturing a lot of that. She told these kids, never say you can't, always say you'll try. And we give lots of talks around town about what it's like to be blind, technologies for the blind, and things like that. And we often incorporate that into our discussions and presentations to people. Never say you can't, always say you'll try. There's always a way of doing something if you really want to do it. It may be a little bit differently. You may have to work a little bit harder at it, but usually there's a way of doing whatever you want to do.
Turning now to our low-tech item, let's meet Jose for real. Here he is introducing himself.
My name is Jose Tamayo. I live in Miami, Florida. I have been here for more than 30 years. I'm not originally from the United States. At the age of 10, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. I knew that I had a visual impairment from about the age of 7, because my mother, she started noticing that I had night vision loss. Retinitis pigmentosa is a disorder that causes mutations and problems in the retina. At first, you lose your side vision, your peripheral vision, and then you lose your central vision. But you begin to see through sort of like a tunnel. And then eventually you start seeing as if you were looking underwater. And then eventually, you know, the light is what remains now. I can no longer perceive people, objects. I can just perceive shadows and light.
So did your diagnosis coincide with coming to the U.S.?
Yes, it did. It was shortly after I arrived here when I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. I think technology was somewhat lacking where I used to live, and they just couldn't figure out what I had.
And where was that you used to live?
I am originally from Cuba.
So as Jose said, his eyesight deteriorated over time, over a number of years. That was very similar to my situation. When I was younger, I used to be able to hold things very close to my face and read it. Maybe I had 2200, 2400 vision. And as time progressed, my eyesight eventually deteriorated to the point where I can only barely see lights and shadows now. Sometimes I can tell if the light's on in the room, but not always. And, you know, as Jose will tell you later on, you know, you learn to accommodate slowly and adjust your lifestyle as the progression happens.
So we'll be talking mostly about some extreme canoeing that Jose does as the focus item for this show, but that's just what he does for fun. Professionally, he's a computer scientist. In fact, Pete and Jose first met each other on a blind technology distribution list.
My line of work is in information technology research. What I did was I ran a research and development shop where we took in technology and we matched up the technology with specific needs for customers. And most of my background is in research. I love doing computer technology research. It is my love. I am now working on a computer science degree. I'm trying to complete a master's in computer science so that I can get more into the academia, the research areas that I'm interested in.
And fortunately, the assistive technology makes all of this computer work possible. Goodness knows you used a lot of it.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it was very fortunate that as my eyesight degraded, the technology improved to such an extent that, you know, my access to information and communications was not really deteriorating.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is extreme canoeing. You may think of canoeing as just sitting back in the sunshine.
I do.
Paddling gently, maybe being carried along by the current. And what could be extreme canoeing? Well, if you listen to Jose's stories, you'll understand how we can call it that. He started doing this in college and has been doing very long canoe trips every year ever since.
I used to be the president of a computer science club at the college that I used to attend. This is when I had most of my sight. We used to take excursions to many, many different places. And then one day we decided, hey, why don't we try some of the extreme sports in the area? And we found this place up in Arcadia, Florida, that allowed us to do that. And so what we did is we took a group up there of about 30 people to experience that. And our very first trip was in 1991, and it was a 37-mile paddling trip down the river, two people per canoe, and it was extremely fun. It was something that I enjoyed doing the first time, and I've been doing it ever since. It is out in the jungle. There's no civilization, and you get to interact with many species of wildlife. You know, alligators and, I guess, panthers and black bear and bobcats and, you know, anything you can imagine out there, it's out there.
Hopefully you don't interact too closely.
We try not to. I'm usually the organizer, and so I like to keep it where I know where we are and I know the species, the animals that are out there. I try to educate myself and the group as to the whatnots and, you know, what not to do and what to do when out there. And so we've been able to keep it safe for almost 20 years now.
You guys go out in the jungle, you're armed with canoe paddles, or do you have somebody with something more serious for backup just in case?
No, we don't have any backup. Actually, we don't have any motors or anything like that. What we do is we go out there with a minimum of four people, two canoes, up to a maximum of, you know, however many people want to go with us. And we just paddle down the river and camp out wherever we can find a spot.
Oh, I really meant a gun just in case one of these things tries to attack you, not a motor.
Oh, no. The only weapons that we take are knives and axes. And I've never been there with a gun, never taken a gun there before.
How long do these trips last?
Our typical trip is a 37-mile trip. It is about 5 hours per day. So typically 3 days to 4 days on the 37-mile trip. Mm-hmm. And we like to take an extra day just to relax. It's quite a bit of paddling, but it is not a fast-paced river. It is something that is, it's really relaxing. But it does take a toll after a couple of days. But it's fun.
a number of years ago, I went on what was supposed to be a three-day canoe trip with some colleagues of mine from Xerox. And it started out kind of fun. You know, we were up in the Adirondacks going down the Racket River. We hopped into our canoes. And then it started raining and it was getting cold. And we camped that night and everything was wet. The plastic bags we had wrapped everything in, some cat had crawled on in the shore and put holes in it. So everything was soaked. Next day, actually, it was a gorgeous day, and we were going to continue the trip, and one of our friends got a little bit too close to one of the waterfalls and wound up going over the edge. Fortunately, he wasn't hurt, but his canoe split in half, and a park ranger saved us. But we didn't run into any alligators, though. As Jose will tell you, they are considerably better prepared than we obviously were for this trip when he goes on his long canoe rides. I guess he has a little bit more experience at it.
I typically exercise 4 times a week. I do strength training at home with a Bowflex. That's how I get ready for this kind of trip. For the next few months, I'm going to be doing a lot of rowing exercises so that I can strengthen my upper body. But most of the time, as long as I keep my core in shape, I'm fairly okay. It gets a little tiring. It gets, after 5 hours of paddling, it becomes interesting for some people. Even for people that are in shape, it is quite an interesting exercise.
I'll bet you burn a lot of calories.
Yes, we do. And we take plenty of food, a lot of water.
Boy, I remember the days when I was exercising and preparing for marathons. You talk about eating and burning calories. I used to have lunch like 2 or 3 times a day. I could eat anything I wanted, and it just didn't impact my weight at all. So you do have to be prepared for these things. And that's an important part of participating in any sport, particularly an extreme sport.
So this trip is a pretty big undertaking for anybody. But just remember, the trip leader is blind. And we asked him what kind of an impact his vision has had on the trip.
I think that the only change that has made an impact on the trips has been that the person that's paddling with me, it has to indicate where the canoe has to turn and by what extent. And I'll explain that a little bit. Typically, the strongest person goes in the back of the canoe. That's the one that guides the canoe. And the person in front is a person that helps with orientation and helps with letting you know what's coming. There are official hand signals that are used, but now I have to rely on audio, on voice. And so the person in front will tell me, turn right, but it's going to be either a soft turn or a sharp turn. And depending on the urgency, then that's how I handle the paddling. The first couple times it took a little bit to get used to it, but I've been able to get people trained to let me know, because this river is really, it really winds quite a bit. And in some areas, it becomes really difficult because the water runs very fast in some areas. Like everybody else, we get stuck sometimes, and we have learned to get out of these situations by the person in front always telling me, hey, look, this is what's coming up in the front. There's a turn to the right, and it's either sharp or it's wide, and so let's make sure that we go this way, or, you know, that the right turn is a sharp one or not. And so that's the biggest impact that we've seen. But the rest of it, you know, I build my own tent. People rely on me at night to do things that they can't do, like building the tents and, you know, moving coolers around and searching for food.
We rely on Pete a lot in a blackout.
That's true. Actually, it was interesting talking to Jose about his method of canoeing with another person. He puts himself in the back. We often do it the other way around.
Always.
Nancy and I will often go on 2 or 3 hour canoe trips, not 2 or 3 days, and when we're on vacation. And I get the front, and Nancy's steering in the back. But we manage to compensate, and things work out that way.
That works great until I start getting tired. And then the fact that Pete's intrinsically a lot stronger than I am becomes a bigger problem. And finally, I swallow my pride and I say, Pete, just ease up or skip a couple strokes, and because he'll be overpowering me and I'm just unable to keep the canoe going exactly where I want it.
Well, maybe we can take a tip from Viewpoint someday and try it out the other way and see how it works for us.
We can do that. It would work better if we both knew right from left. But it works for Jose. As I believe Jose mentioned, he's got two daughters, and the younger one has cystic fibrosis, which is a genetic disorder that primarily creates difficulty breathing, but has other major symptoms as well. Having a disability himself puts Jose into a unique position to be able to be a positive role model for her.
My grandfather had retinitis pigmentosa as well. He lost his sight around the same time that I did. As a child, I used to take him everywhere. He used to rely on me for getting on the bus, getting around, and doing most of the things that he could do. I had to be with me because at that time, there were no facilities where we used to live for him to be able to have a cane or a dog or even be permitted inside a store with a dog. And so I learned a lot from my experience with my grandfather, and that I was able to use to train myself and help myself and now help my daughter. My daughter has cystic fibrosis, and I never think about what I'm going to tell her because for some reason I have this inner feeling that I never let anything get in my way. And what I mean by that is I do things because I know that I can do them, and I teach my daughter the same thing. And without hurting anyone and without causing harm to anyone, and I teach that to my daughter. She was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis when she was about 2 months old. My interaction with her is much in the same way as my grandfather was with me. He saw life as normal. There was really, he never felt like there was that he had a disability. It is exactly how I feel. I think he taught me a lot, and I'm teaching my daughter to do the same thing, to feel like she doesn't have anything. She is just another person with a condition. I think that we all have something, and we all have something that prevents us from doing certain things. And I realized that when I lost my sight, and I realized that when I found out my daughter has cystic fibrosis. So I tried my best to make sure that she lives as much a normal life as possible, and that she knows that as long as you feel within you to do something, just go ahead and do it, but don't hurt anybody. She's a very positive little girl. She's wonderful. She's learned to deal with her condition. I don't see her worried about what she has. She's just worried about doing her homework, getting her work done, doing what's right, and that's what's important, I think.
How old is she?
She's 10 years old. She's a wonderful child.
You know, I think Jose's daughter is very lucky to have a father with such an attitude and to raise her with a sense of independence and that she can do anything she wants to do. And it sounds like he'll be a very good role model for her.
And one of the things he's doing is, I mean, he's been talking about this annual 37-mile canoe trip. That sounds like a big deal. This year's canoe paddle will be 65 miles long. And it's a special trip that he and his friends are doing in an effort to raise awareness and research funds for cystic fibrosis, hoping to find a cure. Because although, you know, he's teaching his daughter to live as normal of his life as she can, wouldn't it be nice if they could cure this awful disease?
The number 65 is significant because it goes back to Mrs. Weiss. One night she was doing a fundraiser. Her three sons had cystic fibrosis. Her smaller son was watching her, and he asked her mom, he actually commented and said, "Mom, I know what you're doing. I know that you're working for 65 roses, 65 roses, you know?" And from that point on, all, you know, children of all ages have used that phrase to refer to the condition. And so 65 is a number that I use for my paddling trip. I'm going to be paddling 65 miles on the Peace River because I want to raise awareness and hopefully some funding for this, you know, to help find at least to help find a cure for this disease. I'm going to be paddling with about 10 or 11 other friends who are going to do the 5-day trip with me from Fort Meade, Florida to Arcadia, Florida.
That sounds like quite a trip, 65 miles. It was also interesting, this story about how it became 65 miles being associated with cystic fibrosis.
Kids say the darndest things.
Yeah.
So this trip doesn't start until April 4th, 2012. We're airing this show many months in advance. And, you know, if you want to learn more about the trip and cystic fibrosis. We'll be giving you all sorts of contact information later in the show so that you can learn more about their preparations and what they're doing and what this is all about. So, you know, the way we've been talking to Jose, it sounds like he's got plans for going off into the jungle by himself and paddling a canoe. Not true. Apparently, all this canoeing is really a family affair.
My girlfriend, she's always up front. And when she gets tired, she stops paddling and she starts telling me left, right. And, and she's amazed at how we just never crash because her voice, the urgency in her voice tells me, hey, this is a sharp turn.
Right, right. You can tell from the intensity, right?
Exactly. I agree.
So is she coming on this 65-mile ride with you?
She is going to be in the front. She already told me I'm not going to paddle that much. Be thankful, she says, that I'm going to be in the front telling you where to go.
And where are the girls going to be?
They're going to join us on the last 2 days because Melissa cannot be out on the river overnight with the conditions of potential cold, and her lungs are very sensitive, so she would not be able to be there for the whole time. But they're going to join me on the last 2 days. They're going to be a lot more comfortable than we are. They're going to be on a smaller raft, and they're not going to do that much paddling.
And we always used to take our kids on canoe rides with us, too, back when they were still living at home.
Now for this week's high-tech item, using technology to stay in touch, even if you're on a river in the middle of a jungle. Jose is planning to use all sorts of technology to issue daily reports on his progress and experiences in text, audio, and video.
I use an iPhone, which is the most effective for me. For that period, I'm going to use, I have a couple of friends of mine that have the same phone, and we're going to try to spread out the providers. In other words, I have a friend that's with AT&T, and I have another friend that's with Verizon, and we're going to try to make sure that we have coverage so that I could microblog using Twitter and so that I can keep regular updates at regular intervals.
How would people follow you if they want to follow this trip?
I have a website, and it's www.paddle4, the word F-O-R, CF.com. So paddle4CF.com. And my Twitter is at paddle4CF. And I have a Facebook, which is facebook.com/paddle4CF. And again, my website is www.paddle4CF.com. I have Twitter updates on that site. Every time I have an update, it gets posted there as well, because I've put a gadget there for Twitter, so that as I'm microblogging, it can appear on the website immediately.
So this is great. You're combining your love of the outdoors with your love of high tech.
Exactly, right? Yes, I am. Yes. And it's important that I maintain communication, because I'm going to be talking about what we're going to see out there, you know, the kinds of experiences we're going to have, what we're going to be eating out there, how we're going to be sleeping, what we're going to be, essentially every detail about the trip, so that people can have an idea of how wonderful this is, and, you know, how much we're really roughing it out there and how much we really want to make a difference here.
Maybe grab some audio clips for us and we can interview you about the trip sometime in May about how it went.
Yeah, I was planning that as well. I have an Olympus recorder that I'm going to take with me with plenty of extra batteries, so that I can have audio recordings. We do video recordings as well. I'm going to be posting that on YouTube. And I do have a YouTube set up as well with paddle4cf@gmail.com. I'm going to be posting videos on there. Maybe during the trip, if I can, because sometimes the bandwidth does not allow for video uploads. But as soon as the trip is over, we're going to have plenty of video and plenty of audio to put up there.
So again, if you want to follow Jose, he gave you lots of way to follow him during his trip, and that starts April 4th of 2012. We'll put up links on our website, www.viewpointsplus.net, in the show notes so you can follow Jose a little bit more closely. And then hopefully, if we get a chance to, we can have him come back in the spring to talk about some of the highlights of the trip on the show.
I was just hoping that none of that fancy equipment was going to get wet. After that story you told where everything you had with you got soaked, I don't know, that's a lot of fancy equipment.
I was hoping it wouldn't get eaten by an alligator.
Better the equipment than the people.
Right.
So I know Jose gave you pretty much all of the web addresses for where he's going to be posting information on his trip, but I'm going to give it to you again. So his main website, which is already up on the web, you can go to it now if you want, is at www.paddle4cf.com. That's all one word, and the four is F-O-R. It's not the digit four. So www.paddle4cf.com. And he's got links to all sorts of information about cystic fibrosis. He's got a Facebook page that's at www.facebook.com/paddle4cf. And we will be posting a link to that on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/viewpointsplus. And also Reach Out Radio will be posting a link to that on its Facebook page. That's at www.facebook.com/reachoutradio. He's got a Twitter feed, which will be at paddle4cf, and of course, a YouTube channel at www.youtube.com for all of the video that they're posting. You can search either for the channel called paddle4cf or do a search for his email address, paddle4cf@gmail.com.
I hope he survives.
Oh, man, me too. It's quite an undertaking. And just, you know, how much love he's got for that little girl and doing his best to raise her as well as he can.
So good luck to everybody.
That's right. That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about music production using sonar and the special scripts that exist that you can use with your screen reader in order to work sonar. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.